Shalom, welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to Refuah Shlema, a complete recovery, for Malka Bat Simcha, and to elevating the souls of Simcha Chazdai, Pesach Vansir, Harab Meir Kahana, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, I want to speak about the latest development in the race for president in 2016, because there was a huge development in the past 24 hours. Donald Trump became the clear frontrunner in the polls, and that was a disaster for the Republican Party and for the conservative cause. First of all, Donald Trump is not a real conservative. He was always pro-abortion. He was always in favor of affirmative action. He was pro-amnesty until the end of 2012. He was someone who contributed money to the campaigns of Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton and supported the Clintons and said wonderful things about the Clintons until he decided to run for president as a Republican. So Donald Trump clearly is not a conservative, not a sincere person. He's a phony, he's a demagogue. But he knew to grab onto the issue of amnesty for illegal aliens and made that a big issue. And because it is a very legitimate and justified concern, because this is what is destroying America, and this is what will turn America into a third world banana republic, because he understood the deep concern among Republicans and among conservatives on that issue, he seized on that issue and he became the front runner in the race for the Republican nomination. But the problem is, when your front runner is a candidate who is a complete phony and a candidate who has a history of doing crazy things and saying crazy things, then what you're doing is you're just helping Hillary Clinton and you're helping the left-wing Democrats who want to implement complete amnesty, who want to do things that will destroy America and that will endanger Israel's survival and do all the other terrible things that we're concerned about when it comes to the anti-Semitic, evil, left-wing candidacy of Hillary Clinton. So Donald Trump was a catastrophe waiting to happen. Fortunately, 24 hours ago, he made a big mistake. He went in front of evangelical Christians in Iowa, and he was asked questions, and he said that John McCain is not a war hero. Now, we can't stand John McCain. He is a traitor to the Republican Party. He is a supporter of every evil establishment proposal you can think of. He's a complete rhino, a complete fake phony fraud. And he blew the election of 2008 when he was running against Barack Hussein Obama. So John McCain is a terrible person and someone that we absolutely can't stand in any way. But when Donald Trump said that he's not a war hero, Donald Trump did something which was of course going to invite huge criticism and condemnation. And by the way, I happen to think that what Donald Trump said about John McCain is true. I don't think he's a war hero. Why don't I think he's a war hero? Because I believe that he betrayed the Vietnam veterans when he was in North Vietnam and after he got out of North Vietnam. But that's a whole other story. I don't want to go into all the history of that, and that's certainly something that no one could survive politically on the national stage if someone openly says that, but let me just give you this as food for thought about John McCain. John McCain was tortured and went through all types of terrible torture when he was a POW, a prisoner of war, in North Vietnam. And the first thing he does when he comes to the United States, he spends a lifetime supporting all of Communist Vietnam's demands. He supports giving foreign aid to Communist Vietnam. He supports diplomatic relations with Communist Vietnam. He supports the sham agreements that were made between the United States and Communist Vietnam. In other words, he backs up all the demands and all the requests and all the dreams, I mean the dream negotiations, of his former captors, of the people who tortured him. Now, John McCain is a man who does carry a grudge, who hates anybody that does anything to him. I'm sure he hates the Vietnamese for what they did to him, the Vietnamese communists for what they did to him. I have no doubt that he hates them. In fact, he's made anti-Vietnamese racist remarks. So he actually hates all Vietnamese now as a result of that. So he is bitter and filled with hatred, and yet he's supporting all of the demands of Communist Vietnam for foreign aid, for diplomatic relations, for trade relations, everything they want. He was the first one to back them and fight for them to give them what they were requesting. Everything they asked for, he was the first one to support them on this. Obviously, the reason why he did this is because they have something on him. They have him revealing military secrets. They have him doing other things, including betraying his fellow POWs. They've got all of this on film, and they could easily have revealed all of this. So he knows that he's got to do what they want. He can talk about his torture. He can talk about what a war hero he is. He can talk about his military record. But in the end, he's got to do their bidding. He's got to do what the Vietnamese communists want him to do, or else they can release damaging information on him that would destroy his reputation forever. Anyway, that's how I view the situation, so I don't believe he's a war hero. I believe he's a vile individual. Having said that, in American politics, if you dare say something like that about someone like John McCain, you're finished politically. And hopefully Donald Trump, even though, again, on the merits, I don't think Donald Trump should be finished because of what he said about John McCain, but Donald Trump, I do believe, might have crossed the line, and this might be enough to finish him off politically. At least I hope so. Because the number one person that Donald Trump was hurting by his candidacy was Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz is the anti-amnesty candidate, the true conservative in the race, and Donald Trump was sucking up all the support from him and sucking up all the oxygen in the race for the Republican presidential nomination, and Ted Cruz couldn't get anywhere because of that. And so hopefully Ted Cruz will pick up Donald Trump's supporters. I hope Donald Trump's candidacy collapses now. I hope he pulls out of the race completely. I don't know if he will, but I hope he does. And I hope that Ted Cruz will pick up Donald Trump's supporters. I can tell you that we're going to be doing a video appealing to, God willing, we hope to be doing a video appealing to Trump supporters to support Ted Cruz. And please help us promote that video when we do so. And behind the scenes, I also have to tell you, behind the scenes, you know, we do so many things that we can't even talk about on the program. I can't share this with you because if I talk about it publicly, then what we're doing behind the scenes would come to an end. And I know, you know, a lot of Jewish establishment organizations always say, we're doing things behind the scenes, but what they do behind the scenes hurts Israel and hurts the Jewish people because they're self-hating traitors. I'm talking about the Anti-Defamation League, the United Jewish Appeal, which is the UJA, which is really the United Jihad Appeal, and, of course, AIPAC and all these other groups that really stab Israel in the back behind the scenes and elsewhere. I mean, they're always stabbing Israel in the back, and then they say, we're doing behind-the-scenes diplomacy. But JTF really does do things behind the scenes. Some of the things we do behind the scenes don't work, and some of them do. Sometimes it's amazing what we accomplish sometimes by speaking to people. I mean, I've had conversations recently with a couple of people who have played leading positions in the conservative establishment media. In other words, they have conservative establishment websites that have millions of people going to them. And I've actually had interesting conversations with them recently. They weren't even thinking about Ted Cruz. I mean, they liked Ted Cruz, but they weren't thinking about supporting him. And I've had conversations trying to persuade him that he is the person that we should be supporting. And I hope that we're going to be able to convince them. We're also doing something else behind the scenes with the left-wing media that I think it's better if I don't. I'm very tempted to tell you, but I think it's better off if we don't discuss it. But just something very clever that hopefully also will help Ted Cruz. We're always trying to do imaginative things to help him because he's going against the establishment. The latest Iran deal and the terrible Iran situation just proves how right we were about Barack Hussein Obama, how right we are about Ted Cruz, the need to get someone in office like Ted Cruz who means what he says and says what he means and would at least put an end to Iran's nuclear program. Ted Cruz, by the way, has also said that the settlements that Israel builds in Judea, Samaria, and Jerusalem are none of America's business, that Israel should be able to build the settlements where they want, when they want, that America should not interfere with that. So he's saying, in effect, he would have a hands-off policy and let Israel do what they want on the settlements, so there'd be no more pressure on Israel not to build the settlements. So Netanyahu at least wouldn't have the excuse he has now when he's freezing Jewish building. His excuse now is that Barack Hussein Obama and the Europeans are pressuring him. At the very least, if Ted Cruz were president, he wouldn't have that excuse because Ted Cruz has clearly said that he is not against Israeli settlements and that he is not going to tell Israel what to do as far as settlements. It's Israel's decision to make. That would be very, very positive, and that could help us get more Jews there, at least work, hopefully get as many Jews there as possible to try in the long term to prevent the creation of a so-called Palestinian state, which would be national suicide for Israel, God forbid. So Ted Cruz, he's not the perfect candidate, not by any means. He says that Israel has to decide whether she wants a one-state solution or a two-state solution. He's not going to weigh in on that. He said Israel has to decide that, which again, I don't like that position. I think Mike Huckabee took a better position. Mike Huckabee says that he's against the so-called Palestinian state. He's against Israel giving up any land. Ted Cruz just says that's up to Israel. But he promises not to pressure and he promises not to do anything to tell Israel to do. He says Israel, if Israel doesn't want a two-state solution or wants a one-state solution, that's up to Israel and he has no problem. No matter what Israel decides, that's up to Israel. I don't, again, that's not a good enough position from my point of view, but it's certainly better than all the other Republican candidates, except for Mike Huckabee. It's better than all the other Republican candidates who say they support the creation of a Palestinian state, but some of them say, well, now is not the right time because the Fatah terrorists are aligned with the Hamas terrorists, and they have other reasons why it's not the right time right now. At least they say so. Public, that's what they claim now while they're trying to get the evangelical and Jewish votes. But Ted Cruz says, no, I'm not, no time is going to be the right time or the wrong time. Israel has to make that decision. So his position on that issue is better than the other Republican candidates, but still not good enough. Mike Huckabee has the perfect position on that issue. The problem is Mike Huckabee has no chance of getting elected president. Ted Cruz does have a chance. Are the odds against him? Sure they are, but he has a chance. And you might ask, well, what do we do if Ted Cruz runs and loses, God forbid? If he runs and loses, God forbid, then we're going to, hopefully, I hope the Republican that does win, if that happens, will be acceptable to us. And that we'll be able to support him against Hillary Clinton, I hope. So, we'll see. We'll see. But in the meantime, we're pushing for Ted Cruz because he would be a big improvement, a big relief and a big improvement for America and for Israel. And his positions on American issues, of course, are better than the positions of the other candidates as well. He is the most conservative candidate running, the most sincerely conservative candidate running. That there's no doubt about. I, again, want to urge my fellow JTFers, help us. Let's work together as a team. Let's do everything we can. We can make a difference here. Donald Trump's latest comments might open up some new support for Ted Cruz. I hope Donald Trump gets out of the way and allows this race to become a normal race where Ted Cruz can show his great talent as a speaker and as a debater. Let's hope, God willing, that that happens. As you know, this past week, we did 4 videos in English and I think 4 or 5 in Hebrew. So we've been really, really trying to get our point across and trying to reach as many people as possible with the truth, both on YouTube and on Facebook. We're doing what we can to make a difference, and that's what we're obligated to do. And if we work together as a team, we can hopefully make some sort of difference. I hope that we can influence things to make this a better world. So I urge you to help us. Every week we have 4 things that we ask people to do, that we ask our great JTFers to do. Number one, we need your prayers. Please pray that we succeed in what we're trying to do. Please pray for the success of JTF and of JTF's efforts. That's number one. Number two, when you see us put up Hebrew and English videos, please help us promote those videos on YouTube, on Facebook, everywhere. Please help promote those videos. Number three, join and comment on our great news site. We have 2 news sites, 1 in Hebrew, 1 in English. The Hebrew one is hayamin.org. The English one is jtf.org. If you don't speak Hebrew, then at least on the English one, jtf.org, the great news site of Shlomo, which Shlomo has turned into a really great news site. Please comment on there, be active on there, check the news stories there on a daily basis. It's something that will help us promote that news site, and we want to promote it on the search engines, and we want more people to come to it because it's something you can be very proud of. It's a very high quality news site. So that's 3 things I've given you so far. Pray for us, for our success. Help us with the Hebrew and English videos that we put out every week, and go to our great news site, which is updated daily. Those are the 3 things I've asked you to do, and that we asked you to do every week. The 4th thing, of course, is checks, money orders, cash donations to our post office box. Makes a huge difference. The more financial support we have, the stronger we are. The stronger we are, the more people we can reach. And of course, our message is one that is essential. The more people that hear our message, the better. So please help us financially. Your help does make a big difference. Every check, every money order, every cash donation does make a difference. And God bless the great JTFers who are helping us. If you prefer, for the sake of convenience, to do it online, you can, instead of sending a check or a money order or cash donation to our post office box, you can do it online as well, very conveniently. You just go to the donate button, which is on our Hebrew main page. On top, on our Hebrew main page in English, there's a donate button. And the Hebrew main page, again, is hayamin.org. You click on the donate button, and in several minutes, you can very conveniently donate through PayPal. God bless the great JTFers who are helping us, and let's hope, God willing, that we can make a difference, because this is certainly a very dangerous time and a very critical time for Israel and for the Jewish people, for America and for the world. It's a very, very dangerous and critical time, but it's also a time of opportunity to wake people up before it's too late. All right, let's go now to our questions from our great fellow JTFers, and we start out with Wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, why can't Israelis enter most Arab countries? Not that they want to," unquote. Because the Arabs have an anti-Israel policy of excluding people who have been to Israel. If you have, even if you are not an Israeli, if you have Israel stamped on your passport that you went to Israel, most Arab countries will not allow you into their country if you have Israel stamped on your passport. By the way, you'd be surprised at how many self-hating Israelis would like to go to Arab countries. So, tragically, there are many Jews without any self-respect who would actually want to go to Arab countries and give them tourist dollars and legitimize these countries that are committed to the destruction of Israel. But I'm glad that most Arab countries don't let Israelis in, don't let people who have Israel stamped on the passport in. I'm glad that most Arab countries have that policy. I wish all of them did. I wish all of them did. There are a couple of Arab countries, a few that are more clever and that do allow them in, even though those Arab countries hate the Jews and hate Israel just as much as the ones who don't let them in. So, no Jew should visit the Arab world or any Arab countries. Arab countries and Muslim countries are committed to the destruction of Israel and are committed to Islamic Jihad, and no one should ever give their tourist dollars or ever visit any Arab or Muslim country. Wandering Samurai now writes, and I quote, "Also, is Tom Cruise an anti-Semite?" unquote. Okay. Tom Cruise, of course, being the actor. Not that I know of. I don't know of anything he said that's anti-Semitic. Maybe somebody could share with us something that I don't know about, but I don't think he said anything anti-Semitic. I mean, he's part of that cult, the Church of Scientology, so I'm not a fan of his. I think that's crazy. He's part of a crazy cult that believes, the cult was started by a science fiction writer, Hubbard. I think his name was Hubbard. He was writing science fiction, and then he turned the science fiction into a cult, into a so-called religion. And the idiot Tom Cruise and other idiots in Hollywood joined the cult. They wouldn't want to believe in the Bible or in God or in something real, so they have to believe in this nonsense, this idolatrous fantasy. So I think it's stupid, but as far as I know, Tom Cruise hasn't said anything anti-Semitic, as far as I know. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. We go now to Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, what do you think of Donald Trump's comments about Mexicans?" unquote. Well, I think that he's right that many Mexican illegal aliens are rapists, murderers, and criminals. It's a fact. It's a fact. I mean, when I was imprisoned for fighting for Soviet Jews, I was imprisoned with a lot of Mexican drug dealers. And some of them did have in their criminal record, in addition to drug dealing, they were involved with rape, and some had murders in their record. I mean, that's just a fact of life. A very high percentage of people in the federal prison system are illegal aliens, many of them from Mexico. So with Donald, even though I don't like Donald Trump, I think he's insincere. But what he said about Mexicans is factually correct. Joe Gutfeld now writes, "How is your friend, quote-unquote, Cleopatra Jefferson?" I don't know. I don't know what happened to her. I mean, she was a manager at a company She was an affirmative action manager at a company, and we did a video on her that you can, I think you can find on YouTube. In fact, you can find it on YouTube. We did a video explaining what happened to me. I have no idea. I have no idea what happened to her. I don't know. But I'm certainly not optimistic that company would get any brains and decide to fire her. That I know doesn't happen, because they are the first hired and then never fired. No matter what, they never get fired. Thank you, Joe Gutfeld. We go now to Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, "One, discuss Ross Perot," unquote. Ross Perot is a multi-billionaire from Texarkana, a city that I'm very familiar with because I was in jail there. You know, Texarkana is on the Arkansas-Texas border, and there's a federal prison there that I was in for a while. I was part of my 5.5 years in prison. It's one of the places that I went through. I didn't stay there long, but I traveled through Texarkana. I was there for several weeks. Ross Perot is a multi-billionaire who ran for president in 1992. And he got 19% of the vote running for president. Probably Bill Clinton was probably elected to the presidency because of him, because Ross Perot took enough votes away from George Bush Sr. to enable Bill Clinton to get elected. So he probably enabled Bill Clinton to get into the White House by doing that. It became a three-way race. And again, Perot got a lot of votes. He got 19% of the vote. The second time he ran in 1996, he got much fewer votes. I think he got about 8% or something like that. But still, he was a significant candidate because he had a lot of money and he got a lot of attention being a billionaire. And we see that billionaires who run for president get a lot of attention. He was pro-abortion, just on issue after issue. He was wrong on the issues and just was a complete jerk. I don't know how else to describe it. And not only that, also nuts. I mean, some of the things he said in the campaign were nuts, that the Black Panthers threatened to kidnap his daughter if he didn't pull out of the campaign right before her wedding. I mean, just things that were completely absurd. Binyamin now writes, too, if black kids just throw rocks for fun down at an empty area, what punishment should they get? Unquote. Oh, if they're not doing any harm and they're not hurting anybody and they're just throwing rocks, and there's nobody there and it's absolutely empty and nobody gets hurt, then I don't think they should be punished. I don't think they should be punished if they're doing that. But if they're endangering people, then they definitely should be punished. Thank you, Binyamin. We go now to Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, "Expose the white nationalist Jared Taylor," unquote. Jared Taylor, whom I know because he wanted me to speak at the events that he has. He has events, and he wanted me to be a speaker there. He invited me to be a speaker there, so I was in. He got in contact with me. He's someone who claims he's not anti-Semitic, but he works with David Duke. He invites David Duke and other Nazis to come and speak, and then you have sick Jews also who come and speak there, thereby giving legitimacy to the Nazi David Duke. I told him I would not be willing to speak there because of the fact that he deals with Nazis. I would never speak at any organization that gives legitimacy to a Nazi pig like David Duke. I will never go to any event like that. But in any event, he claims he's not anti-Semitic, but you know, come on, give me a break. And he did actually write some stuff against Israel recently. So, you know, the claim that he's not anti-Semitic, I think, is being exposed as untrue, to say the least. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, compare, quote, professors Gary Berg and Kevin McDonald, unquote. Well, Gary Berg is a vicious Jew hater. Is he a professor or is he a minister? I don't know. Isn't he a minister? I see you putting professors in quotes, but the Gary Berg that I know, someone who claims to be a so-called evangelical minister, is a vicious Jew hater. He twists the Bible to support all of Israel's enemies. He's just a vicious anti-Semite. That's the only Gary Berg I know, and obviously he's a cursed, evil enemy of God and of Israel and of the Bible and of the Jewish people. And he, of course, will be punished for doing that in the name of the Bible, in the name of God, in the name of the Bible. Yet he will be punished very severely for his evil attacks upon God's people. And then Kevin McDonald. He, if it's the right one that I'm thinking of, he made a so-called documentary justifying Muslim Nazi terrorism, where he interviews the Muslim Nazi terrorist and justifies him and supports the Muslim Nazi terrorist. So he's another cursed piece of garbage. And now Lewinsky Stinks writes, most Orthodox Christians ridicule brother, quote-unquote, Nathaniel Kapner, unquote. Well, obviously he's an embarrassment because he's an open Nazi. This is someone who was born Jewish and who became a Nazi. A guy who was born Jewish became a Nazi and blames the Jews like Hitler did for every single bad thing in the world. He blames his fellow Jews for this, and he's just such a nasty, evil, ugly, filthy swine. And he is never removed from YouTube, by the way. He's never removed. Nazi Jew hatred that he preaches is perfectly acceptable to YouTube. Chaim Ben Pesach, if I had one channel on YouTube, that I could have had one channel since 2006, with tens of millions of views by now. If we had had just one channel and were able to build momentum and really do what other people are allowed to do, I'd have tens of millions of views. We'd be a mass movement already. But me, they removed. Me, they forced to do. They forced us to use the new method we use, which kills the number of views we have, which severely cuts down on the number of views we have. Our new method is that we have hundreds and hundreds of channels all over the place, and we put our videos on hundreds of channels, so we're not pegged to just one channel where they can take us down. And that method has worked. You know, very few of our videos are removed right now. Our videos, almost all of our videos stay up, even though people do complain about them and do flag the videos, and the flagging hasn't worked. I mean, the flagging is almost always unsuccessful, and our videos stay up there because we have them scattered all over hundreds of channels. But the big disadvantage is when you have hundreds of channels all over the place, people don't have one central channel where they can go to, and it's hard to build momentum. So we still reach people. We still accomplish things. We still reach people. But it's not as effective as it could have been. But this vicious Nazi Jew hater is allowed to remain on YouTube, and his channel and his videos are never touched. Look at what an evil, Jew-hating, filthy site, what a Nazi site YouTube is. And who owns YouTube? The self-hating Jewish Nazis of Google. And they are Jewish Nazis, by the way. These are Jewish Nazis that own Google and that own YouTube. The scum of the earth. That's the real story here. That Nathaniel Kapner, a Jewish Nazi who constantly calls for the destruction of the Jewish people and blames the Jews for every problem under the sun, this animal and the Nazi David Duke and other Nazis, they're allowed, and Hamas and Hezbollah, and they're all allowed to have channels that are never touched on YouTube. But JTF and Chaim Ben Pesach, if they had one channel that they really build up with hundreds of videos, if we really did that, which would have gotten us a huge audience, they take us down. That's the real story here. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. We go now to Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote, "Stalin deported Koreans," unquote. Okay, I wasn't familiar with this, but I assume that's in the Asian section of the Soviet Union. He deported Koreans or Koreans who lived in the Soviet Union? Okay, I didn't know that. But it doesn't surprise me. Stalin was a Georgian, by the way. He was from Georgia. But Stalin and the other Soviets, even though they speak about the workers of the world and fighting racism, all of them are racists. I mean, the people Stalin represents them and the Soviets were the biggest racists you could ever find. Smash Islam now writes, "Bulgaria opportunists," unquote. Oh, of course. I mean, the dictator of Bulgaria supported Stalin. And as soon as Stalin was ousted and Khrushchev took over, he supported Khrushchev, who had a different policy from Stalin. And then when when the Soviet Union was under Gorbachev, he supported Gorbachev. So Gorbachev again changed Soviet policy. And then when Gorbachev, when the Soviet Union collapsed and broke up, and we broke up into different countries, Russia and all the other different Soviet, former Soviet republics all broke up, then Bulgaria changed policy again. So it didn't matter. Whoever was in charge, whatever the Soviet policy was, that's who they went with. That was what the Bulgarian dictators, the Bulgarian communist dictators did. Of course it's opportunism of the worst type. Smash Islam now writes, Christian Bale called Moses terrorist, barbarian, schizophrenic, unquote. Yeah, well, this is another British Nazi Jew-hating actor, a so-called actor, the scum of the earth. And you know, look at the irony here. This guy is given his first break by the self-hating Jew Steven Spielberg. A lot of these Nazi Jew haters often get their start by from the self-hating Jews in Hollywood, or someone else gives them their first break. The self-hating Jew Steven Spielberg gave him his first break, and that's how he became a famous actor, because of Steven Spielberg. And yet he turned on the Jews. Look how he turned on the Jews, and look at his vicious remarks here. And by the way, his stepmother, just to give you another example of the Jewish connection here, his stepmother is the feminazi Gloria Steinem. Gloria Steinem is, her mother was not Jewish, but her father was an intermarried self-hating Jew. So again, you know, that's his stepmother, was someone whose father was a self-hating Jew, and he got his first break from a self-hating Jew, from Steven Spielberg. So you would think he'd be grateful to the Jewish people, because he's a completely untalented piece of subhuman garbage, and yet he's given fame and money and everything else, which he doesn't deserve, and yet he turns on the people who gave him these opportunities. It's just little lessons that we should learn along the way in life. And Smash Islam now writes, Indonesia is secular yet anti-Israel, unquote. Well, the secular Muslim countries, like in a secular Muslim country like Indonesia, of course they're going to be anti-Israel and anti-Semitic. They're still Muslims. A secular Muslim is still a Muslim. Even though there are other Muslims who would want to kill them, nevertheless, they are still Muslims. They're still loyal to Islam, and they're still loyal to their fellow Muslims that are fighting against the Jews to destroy the Jews. Now, of course, Indonesia is going to be anti-Israel and anti-American, by the way. Of course, they vote in the UN against America. They're very anti-American. And their media is anti-American, their education system. Secular Muslims are also anti-Israel and anti-Semitic. Thank you, Smash Islam. We go now to Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, your opinion of the Oath Keepers. Well, the Oath Keepers is a group that was started by an ex-staff member for Ron Paul, the Nazi. So, you know, I'm not impressed with them, obviously. You know, if it was an organization of people trying to defend American rights, or going on the border to fight against illegal aliens, or doing something, you know, that I would support them. But this isn't that. This isn't like that at all. I mean, these with all the crazies, the Ron Paul people, the conspiracy people, the crazy people. You know, this is counterproductive. Counterproductive. Ron Paul, whom this guy wanted to become the founder of the Oath Keepers, supported Ron Paul for president. Ron Paul thinks that America's border should be completely opened up. Ron Paul thinks that Iran should get nuclear bombs. And Ron Paul is just a complete traitor. So what type of group, I mean, what type of positive group could come from people with this type of twisted thinking? Thank you, Chicago Jew. We go now to Manch, who writes, and I quote, Confederate versus Nazi flag. Some people claim they're equally offensive. Discuss why a Confederate flag wouldn't be as offensive as a Nazi flag to a Jew. Well, obviously the Confederacy did not engage in genocide against blacks the same way that the Nazis did against the Jews. That's obvious. Also, you know, the Confederates did the blacks the biggest favor in the world. They brought them to America. I mean, where would a black person rather be? In America, which pampers and gives everything to black people for nothing on a silver platter? Or in Uganda, where they're all starving to death? And where they all eat each other? With the Tutis and the Hutis and the Wutis and the Shmutis. And they're all killing each other and eating each other alive, and 40 different wars going on, and tribal wars, and one-third of the males all have AIDS. I mean, where would, you know, Where would a black person rather be? In the hellish? I mean, if ever there was hell on earth, it would be the continent of Africa. In the hellish continent of black Africa? Or in the United States of America, where they get everything on a silver platter. Everything is handed to them. They don't work. They don't study. They don't learn. They're given degrees in college that they don't deserve. They can't even read their own diplomas. They're advanced and given all types of jobs and positions and even made president of the United States. I mean, where would they rather be? So the Confederates who brought them here as slaves actually did them a big favor. Because even when they were slaves, they were living better in the South as slaves than the way they were living as so-called free people in the jungles of Africa. So, of course, the Confederate flag should not be regarded as offensive in the way that the Nazi flag is. Of course not. Thank you, Mensch. And we go now to Kalman ben Menachem, who writes, and I quote, Reb Chaim, what can you teach us about the Polish government's anti-Jewish boycott of the 1930s? Thank you, unquote. Well, the Polish government, yes, they did have an anti-Jewish boycott, and they discriminated against Jewish students in universities and Jewish businesses and did all types of things against the Jews. Some of it was because they saw what Hitler and the Germans in the 1930s started to do in Germany, and the Poles were always viciously anti-Semitic. Violently, viciously burning with hatred and envy toward the Jewish people, always. Always. And that godforsaken, hideous country, Poland, that country of drunken, vicious, superstitious, primitive people, that hideous country would have had nothing if not for the Jews. Anything good that ever came to Poland came because of the Jews, the Polish Jews that were there. And they, instead of being grateful and instead of wanting to learn from the Jews and become like the Jews, and instead of doing that, the hatred, the envy, the murderous hatred toward the Jewish people is something that is part of Polish history for centuries. So we saw that they did institute anti-Semitic laws in the 1930s and during the Holocaust, even though they were fighting, with one hand they were fighting the Germans who had invaded their country. With the other hand, they were handing over the Jews to help the Germans murder all the Jews, all the Polish Jews. Over 3 million Polish Jews were murdered. Half of the Jews that were murdered in the Holocaust were Polish Jews. So and the Germans deliberately placed their worst concentration camps, their worst death camps like Auschwitz in Poland, because they knew the Polish people would support it. They knew the Polish people supported the annihilation of the Jewish people. So it's a cursed country with a cursed history, and may God avenge the blood of the millions of innocent Jews that were murdered by these beasts, and may there be justice, and someday there will be. Someday there will be. And by the way, don't think for a moment that because the generation that did this to the Jews, most of them are dead already because this happened 70 years ago, don't think for a moment that that means there won't be justice. There's still another world after death. And believe me, God does not forget or tolerate when someone goes against his people and commits these acts of injustice. Thank you, Kalman. We go now to Rashi, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, opinion please of the Temple Institute, unquote. I like the Temple Institute. I like what they're doing. I think that they're preparing the Jewish people for the building of Beit HaMikdash, of the Third Temple, God willing. And it's something that's necessary. And so I like the work that they're doing. I think they're a good organization. Rashi now writes, feelings on Yehuda Glick's Muslim obsession, unquote. I hope Yehuda Glick is not associated with the Temple Institute, because if he is, if he's a leader in that group, then I might take my words back. Now that you mention Yehuda Glick, because Yehuda Glick is terrible, terrible. He loves Muslims. He puts his nose up every Muslim Nazi's tuchus. He is just a disgusting person, disgusting, absolutely disgusting individual. He prays with them. He invites them to pray with him on the Temple Mount. He goes all over praying with them and encouraging interfaith prayers and meetings with the Muslims. I mean, just disgusting, just absolutely disgusting. He's a terrible influence on the Jewish people. I don't know if they formally have actual prayers, but he has organized meetings with them and has praised them, and you know, kisses their behind left and right. I mean, just absolutely grotesque. Absolutely grotesque. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, that they've even had interfaith prayer together. They've even met and had that, if I'm not mistaken. I think they've had that also. But certainly, he's had numerous meetings with the Muslims and kisses their behind and loves them as they're calling in their religion for the destruction of the Jewish people and acting upon it. And he's learned nothing, even though he was shot and nearly assassinated by a Muslim. And now, Rashi, and again, I praise the Temple Mount organization, but you mentioned Yehuda Glick together with them, maybe because you know something that I don't know. If he's associated with the Temple Institute, then I would take my words back about having praised them. Rashi now writes, did Robert Maxwell secure arms for Israel in 1948? Oh, I have no idea. I don't know. I doubt it. I mean, Robert Maxwell was a really grotesque individual who betrayed Israel, betrayed the Jewish people. So I doubt it. I doubt it. You know, people can make up all types of stories about what they did in the past. And sometimes, you know, they have to prove that what they said was true. So, I mean, you know how many millions, I'm putting millions in quotes, but you know how many Jews I've met that knew Rabbi Kahana and were involved in JDL, supposedly? I mean, when I was running JDL, they were involved in JDL. I mean, if you don't think I would know who they are when I was running JDL. I mean, you know how many millions of Jews I met who were involved in JDL and they knew Rabbi Kahana and they did this and they did that. And you know, and when I was a kid, all the Jews were part of the Irgun and they all knew Jabotinsky and they all, now, come on. So, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. Thank you, Rashi. And the reason I don't believe it with Robert Maxwell is because he did terrible things in regard to Israel and the Jewish people later on in life. Thank you, Rashi. And we go now to Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, one, your thoughts about Trump-Cruz meeting, unquote. Well, I think Ted Cruz very much wants to get the Trump supporters, because Trump built up a large following, and Cruz very much wants to get those supporters if and when Donald Trump implodes. If there's an implosion of his candidacy and he falls apart, his candidacy falls apart, Ted Cruz wants those candidates to come to him. So I think the meeting was a good idea. At the time, I think the meeting was a good idea. Now, after what Trump has done in the past 24 hours, the statements he's made, I think a meeting like that could actually hurt Cruz. But before then, before this latest incident, I think it was a good idea. Dr. Dan now writes, too, Jewish perspective. Why is it ethical to kill suffering animals, but we have to keep suffering human beings alive? I assume that's what you mean, Dr. Dan. Okay, great question. Because human beings have a special mission in life. Now, there's a limit to keeping suffering human beings alive. There is a limit to that as well. We don't kill them. We don't actively kill them, but we can remove artificial devices that keep them alive artificially if they're just suffering needlessly and there's no point to their suffering. We can do that. We're allowed to do that. Of course, it has to be only because they're terminal and there's no hope for their recovery anymore. If they can recover, if there's any hope for their recovery, and if there's... you know, there are all types of factors that have to be taken into consideration. Then you're not allowed to let someone die. So there are limits on keeping suffering human beings alive. It's not something that's absolute. But generally speaking, we have pretty strict rules of trying to keep people alive, even if they're suffering. We have very strict rules about that because we're in this world temporarily for the short lives that we live. Our life goes very fast. But we're in this world in order to improve the world and to play a corrective role that can have an eternal influence, that can influence all generations. You know, everything you do in this world, every positive thing you do and every negative thing you do can have reverberations for generations to come and can affect your eternal destiny. And so if somebody's in this world, let's say somebody's in this world and they're in the hospital. Now, what good are they going to do in the hospital? An old person in the hospital. What good can they do in the hospital? You never know. You never know. when their relatives and friends come to visit them, maybe they could influence their relatives and friends in a positive way. When the hospital staff takes care of them, maybe they could have a positive influence on the lives of their hospital and of the hospital staff. Maybe the other patients they meet in the hospital can be influenced by them in a positive way. If they bring the knowledge of God, or if they bring concepts like kindness, compassion, love, truth, justice, if they bring this into the lives of other human beings, even in a hospital setting, they can have an influence on people. On the other hand, and by the way, if that's true for an elderly person or a very sick person in the hospital, how much more so is that true for healthy people outside of the hospital? How much of an influence can they have on making this a better world? We are here to make this a better world. We are here to bring truth to our fellow human beings and to ourselves, so that we should know the truth and that we should bring truth to other people. That's why we're in this world, and to follow God's commandments and bring other people to follow God's commandments. That's why we're in this world. And so the reason we want to stay alive as long as possible, we want to live long lives, is because the longer the life you live, the more good you can do. Hopefully, or theoretically, that's at least what we would hope somebody would do. As far as animals are concerned, animals are not in the world for the same purpose. And so it's just not the same type of situation. An animal who is suffering and who is in pain, and if you can't alleviate the pain and if you can't help the animal and they're just going to suffer, there's no point to having the animal go through that unnecessary pain. So it's a different situation between animals and human beings. Thank you, Dr. Dan. We go now to Guns N' Roses fan who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim. Why are Orthodox Christian countries more conservative and don't tend to accept gay marriage, quote unquote, and other satanic ideas? God bless you, Ed, unquote. I don't think it's because of the Orthodox religion that they have, the Orthodox Church, if that's what you're referring to. I think it's because these are mainly Slavic countries, and in Slavic culture, homosexuality is frowned upon. It's considered to be a disgusting, horrible thing. And that is something, by the way, which is a very positive aspect of Slavic culture. The Russians and the Serbs and the other Slavic people that can't stand homosexuality, that's a very positive part of their culture. And we, as Jews, should learn from them. We should learn from them. Because they're normal when it comes to that issue. I mean, there are other things Russians do, like drink. Which, you know, like you drink vodka all day long, that's not normal, that's not good. And their society is a mess because of that, because the majority of Russians have a drinking problem. Majority of Russian men have a drinking problem. And I'm not exaggerating when I say a majority of Russian men have a drinking problem. So there are negative aspects to their culture, and the anti-Semitism, of course, of the Russians is a very negative aspect, so there are many negative aspects to their culture, but their attitude toward homosexuality is very normal and very positive, and that's something we should learn from them. That's something we certainly, as Jews who believe in the Torah, we certainly should learn from them when it comes to that. So I think it's more related to Slavic culture, and that's a very positive aspect of Slavic culture. Thank you, Guns N' Roses fan. We go now to PMN, who writes, and I quote, "We are thankful when good news happens to us, but when those good things lead to bad things, should we then feel that God punished rather than bless us?" Unquote. It depends, of course, sometimes. Sometimes something that seems good in the end turns out bad. May not have been good. You know, we don't know sometimes how something's going to turn out. We make assumptions, but we don't know how it's going to turn out in the end. Only God knows in the end how it's going to turn out. If we had prophets, then we'd have human beings who would know also. But we don't have prophecy anymore. Since the destruction of the Second Temple, we don't have prophecy anymore. And we're not going to have prophecy until the Third Temple, until we start building the Third Temple. But sometimes things that seem bad turn out to be good, and sometimes things that seem good turn out to be bad. That's how life works. That can happen sometimes. And there also are times when we're wise enough to figure out that something is going to be good and we're right about it, and sometimes we're right and sometimes we're wrong. But It's the end result, of course, that's the most important. It's the end result that counts the most. What happens in the end is what counts. And so, you know, for instance, taking the easy way out on something may seem like the like a good thing to do in the beginning, but in the end, when you take the easy way out, it usually leads to disaster. Sometimes doing the tough thing and doing something very tough and difficult and having to suffer sometimes for a while leads to good results in the end. You know the saying, no pain, no gain. And there's truth with that. There's truth in that in certain situations. God, there's no question, everything that happens has a reason. And one thing Jews should certainly do is study the Torah in order to understand, or try to understand, why God does what he does and what the events that are surrounding us really mean. And Gentiles, you know, of course, they study the Bible and they also have enough common sense to understand certain times when something is a punishment or when something is a reward. Thank you, PMN. We go now to EB22, who writes, and I quote, please discuss Rand Paul's comments that there needs to be a heightened security for people coming into the U.S. from predominantly Muslim countries, unquote. Oh, this is so phony. He's so phony. You know, he's trying to get in good now to win, you know, of course, he's running for president, to win votes in the primaries and caucuses. All of a sudden, he's concerned about people coming in for predominantly Muslim countries. When his father was running for president, his father wanted to eliminate all borders. His father doesn't think there should be any borders. He doesn't think you should need a passport. The Libertarian Party platform that his father ran on, his father was the Libertarian Party nominee for president in 1988. The Libertarian Party platform says you don't need any passport at all. And as Alex Jones, the Nazi, said when he interviewed Rand Paul in 2012, you sound just like your father. Wow, that he was exactly like his father. All of a sudden we see this great change from time to time. But the real Rand Paul comes out in the end. The real Rand Paul is not any different from his father. These statements are, you know, all these little statements and positions that he takes from time to time, it's so obvious. He's so obviously phony. So obviously phony. Thank you, EB22. And we go to Black Sabbath, who writes, and I quote, one, who is more evil, Barack Hussein Obama or John Kerry, not Cohen Kerry, unquote. Oh, they're both, I would have to say it's a tie. They're both so evil that I wouldn't want to say one is more evil than the other, because that's diminishing my condemnation of the second one. I don't want to give the impression that one could in any way even be regarded as lesser of the evil. They're both so evil that I would have to say they're tied. They both literally want Israel. They literally want to hurt Israel and destroy Israel. They literally want to enable Iran. You know, part of the Iran nuclear agreement, they promised to protect Iran's nuclear facilities from an Israeli military attack. The United States will act like a bodyguard for Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. The United States actually joins and is now on the side of Iran against Israel. That's Barack Hussein Obama and John Kerry, who, as you rightly point out, his father's name was Cohen. You know, or his grandfather's name was Cohen. He wanted to get out of that, you know, and he's doing everything he can now to destroy Israel and destroy the Jews. I'd say they're both tied for being as evil as you can get. Thank you, Black Sabbath. And we go now to Hiram, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what is the story behind KGB forging JDL letters, unquote? The KGB in 1970... We know this from KGB defectors, from people who were KGB agents who defected to the West. The KGB in 1970 had a program of forging letters that were supposedly from the Jewish Defense League and sending them to Arab UN missions and to Arab embassies, threatening the Arabs in order to get the JDL into trouble legally, and sending threatening letters and racist letters to black organizations. So, you know, they had a program of trying to hurt the JDL because the JDL was hurting Soviet-American relations, and the JDL was a real threat to the Soviet objective of having smooth relations with the United States and of not letting the Soviet Jews go, not letting the Soviet Jews leave for Israel. So JDL became a real threat to the KGB and to the Soviets, and so they were using the type of dirty tactics which the KGB, of course, is notorious for. And one of them was forging letters that supposedly came from the JDL and sending them out. Hiram now writes, have you heard of the Kohanim haplotype, unquote? Yes, I have heard of it. They're people who are trying to do a check of chromosomes and genetics to see if someone is really a Kohen. The Kohanim are the priests. And the priests, of course, if someone comes from the lineage of the priests, then, of course, they're going to do the priestly work, including the korbanot, including the sacrifices, in Beit HaMikdash, in the Holy Temple. So it's important that we know who the Kohanim are. So some people were trying to use chromosomes and genetic characteristics to trace the Kohanim. I don't know. I don't know enough about it to know if it's effective or not, or if it really works, but you know, if it does work in enabling us to know who are the Kohanim, then that's a good thing. Thank you, Hiram. We go now to Confederate Kahanist, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, what is your analysis on the following people? Jim Jones." Well, Jim Jones was the head of a notorious cult that went down to Guyana, and I think over 900 of their members committed mass suicide. I think it was over 900 of their members. Over 900 of their members committed mass suicide in the end by drinking poisoned Kool-Aid, if I'm not mistaken. So, of course, he was a lunatic. I mean, this is how, you know, cult leaders lead their cult members down the path to suicidal self-destruction. Now Confederate Kahanist asks about David Koresh. David Koresh was the head of another cult. This cult in Waco, Texas, wound up facing mass death because of the confrontation with federal officials, because Janet the Rhino, who was the Attorney General under Bill Clinton, ordered federal officials to go in, and they killed about 80 of the cult members, including children, which was a disgrace. But nevertheless, the cult was certainly crazy. There's no question about that. I mean, he was leading a cult, and they were certainly crazy. But they didn't deserve, the children in the cult didn't deserve to be massacred like that by federal officials. And Confederate Kahanist now asks about Marshall Applewhite. Marshall Applewhite was also a cult leader, and the members of that, he had about 40 people in his cult that all committed mass suicide. I don't remember how many years. Was that 15 years ago or something like that? Or 20 years ago? 15 or 20 years ago, I don't remember. But I know they also committed mass suicide. Also insanity. These cults are crazy. I mean, they're genuinely crazy. And it's... these three incidents are all examples of why it's good to stay away from cults. Confederate Kahanist writes, thanks and God bless. Thank you, Confederate Kahanist, and I want to thank everybody else for a program I very much enjoy doing. Until next week, shalom.